Good morning, everyone. I am not Wayne. So I invite you this morning to use your imagination a little bit as I read Wayne's sermon to you. And when I get to some of the portions of the sermon where Wayne has shared personal details and it says things like, Mary and I did this, know that it's not me, it's Wayne. So Wayne this week wrestled with this text from Mark 13 that might sound very strange to our ears, the one that Harold just read, because it's very apocalyptic sounding. And these apocalyptic texts we have in the Bible that talk about things ending and there being chaos and turmoil were often texts that were helpful to people who were trying to make sense of why things were the way they were. So we can listen together to Wayne's words this morning as he makes sense of that for us. Bad news, good news. 3 years ago, almost to the day, Mary and I visited the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And as we approached that area and went through the security checkpoints, we came to this place, holy to the Jews, Muslims, and Christians. And we marveled at the majesty of the ruins of the temple. Herod was the builder and a masterful one at that. He rebuilt the temple itself and expanded the stone platform surrounding it to the size of 24 football fields. 7 courses of stone are still exposed at the Wailing Wall. And the workmanship of the masonry is impressive, distinctive. In one of the tunnels, you can see a single stone that is 45 feet long and weighs 570 tons. How did they get that in place? This stunning Temple Mount is still impressive even today. Had only been finished a couple of years when Jesus and the disciples arrived that year for the Passover. The temple was the center of the national life in Israel. The Jews had lost so much in the Roman imperial occupation, but they still had the temple. By building such a grand temple, the Romans thought that they would pacify Judea and keep the rebellious Jews happy. The Temple Mount was considered to be the very center of the earth. But in today's gospel, Jesus tells his disciples the shocking news that this beloved temple will be destroyed. Amid wars and rumors of wars, nation rising against nation, there will be a great cataclysm. This is bad news. And yet, Jesus ends today's gospel saying that these events will be a birth, the beginning of good news. Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings. But Jesus was not impressed and saw through the facade. The temple, which pretended to be the house of God, the intersection of human life with God's grace, a venue for sacrifice, for teaching, and shaping the lives of individuals and communities. But the splendor of the place was filled with corruption, and it failed to embody the life of God in the world. The temple represented collusion between the religious system and the political systems of the day. Another gospel reveals that Jesus even wept at the sight of the Temple Mount, and to the shock of his awestruck disciples, he predicted the dismantling of those weighty stones with their illusion of permanence. Well, Jesus paid the price. He was killed for speaking out and becoming a threat to both the political and the religious powers of the day, who feared the unmasking of their illusion of control, of permanence, and of power. Bad news, perhaps, but we know the good news of the resurrection grew out of that awful death, the birth of something new. You might have remembered that last July 25th, we, Wayne and Mary, had a birth in our family. It was a wonderful event. I will never forget where I was when I heard the good news. The first pictures came in while I was meeting with some of you in a Community Connections team meeting, and you were gracious with my excitement. This is apocalyptic literature, but apocalyptic doesn't mean destruction, ending, or strange events. Apocalyptic means unveiling, revealing. Before Jesus goes to the cross, he lets his disciples in on the final act, a glimpse of the future. And here, toward the end of the church year, the church has an opportunity to reflect upon the end and to ask, is this the finale? The bad news? Is it cataclysmic destruction? Or is this really a birth, a beginning? A cataclysmic, chaotic creation of something new. You don't hear a text like today's gospel often referred to in a church like ours. Progressive churches like this one often don't use literature like Mark 13 or apocalyptic biblical literature because we don't really know what to do with it, and those Left Behind books weren't written by a man who was a Mennonite. So why do we not approach these texts? Perhaps it's because, for the most part, we are a church of fairly privileged people, and people on top, people in power, or people who are feeling good about how things are progressing, do not care for apocalyptic literature that speaks of ending and of the destruction of the present order. After all, the present order hasn't been too bad to us. To hear that God plans to allow the destruction of our eternal-looking achievements is bad news indeed. But it seems to me that a couple of observations might be made about a passage like today's gospel. For one thing, that Jesus so dramatically announces the utter destruction of the temple says that present arrangements are not necessarily what God intends for the world. We tend to think of God working to create the world, to set things in motion, and then God sits back and retires. But what if God keeps creating? What if God intends to get the world that God wanted in the first place? What if not everything that happens in this world happens because God wants it to be that way, but that God means to take everything that happens, even the bad things, and turn them towards God and God's intended good? Jesus is not threatening humanity in this text with a horrible future reality. Like all good prophets and poets, Jesus is simply naming the horrors that already exist and telling all of us that what we think is so permanent is not so. What if church is not where we come to get everything tied down, eternal looking, fixed, but what if we came looking for God's intended new heaven and new earth? Perhaps church at its best fosters a sort of holy discontent in us. When we try to settle in and settle down and content ourselves with, well, this is the best of all possible worlds. It can't get any better than this. This is it. We fail to see the potential of what could be. We have this human tendency to get too impressed with human institutions and crown humanly created situations with divine permanence, as if God created everything that now is. Passages like Mark 13 remind us that God isn't done with us or the world. I believe that our ritual lighting of our peace lamp weekly reminds us that there is much in our world that we are not satisfied with. And maybe we really don't need that reminder unless we're sleepwalking through the week. Could it be that things are not able to be made new until the old passes. Sometimes there can't be birth until there is death. And perhaps it is hard to embrace the new until we have grieved the loss of the old. Perhaps some of us here have had to let go of something in order for something else to emerge. Perhaps some of us here know what it's like to have our temple destroyed, only to be replaced with something much better. Maybe some of us have experienced bad news becoming good news. This past Tuesday night, our Wayne and Mary's daughter, Allison's best friend, Amrita, died. And our hearts are broken, and we wonder why a young woman so full of potential and inner and outer beauty is gone from us. We can't imagine the pain of her mother needing to cope with the death of two daughters. And we can only pray that over time, and with much love and compassion, Pushpa and her family might find some healing and a reason to carry on. But it feels so wrong to tell her right now that some good news will come out of this devastating loss. But I pray that someday all of us will see some good news. And it's only human to cling to what we know, that what we have. Physical moves can be hard. I recall our move from Elkhart, Indiana to Worcester, Ohio, where I was about to become a full-time pastor. And as I drove the rental truck out of Elkhart, I remember the tears streaming down my face. We were leaving a city that had been our home for 6 years, where we bought and sold 2 houses. I completed college and seminary, developed meaningful friendships in a loving church, and where both of our daughters were born. We were leaving all of that for the unknown, with no guarantees that it would be as good. But as I look back, my grief seems now almost silly, because Worcester was a great place to raise our children, to develop new friendships, and to call our home for 21 years. Maybe it's divine to give birth, sometimes painful birth, to a future that is new. And perhaps we come to church to learn how to look for God's hand, even in the news that seems bad, to expect God to work, to continue to create good news. I'm thankful to be part of a church that believes that our God is bringing about peace and shalom, and not more fear and chaos. We hold on to the hope that in the face of relentless bad news, the gospel we proclaim is good news indeed. The Gospel of Mark, that our passage came from this morning, is a gospel that contains many sad events. The incomprehension of the disciples, Jesus' family misunderstanding him, the growing hostility of religious and political authorities, and finally the bloody crucifixion of Jesus. And yet, Mark's gospel begins by saying that all of this, including the bad, is the beginning of the good news. I never think of today's gospel, Mark 13, without remembering our come and see trip to Israel, Palestine. Even beyond the impressive stones of the Temple Mount, our group had many conversations with those who are currently living bad news. Palestinians who are prisoners in their own land, who can't travel the 7 miles from Palestinian territory Bethlehem to Israeli-controlled territory in Jerusalem without going through multiple checkpoints, frequent harassment, and the threat of physical harm. Precious water is sometimes cut off for no reason and other services denied or limited. We marveled at the compassion and bravery of the Christian Peacemaker team members who did simple things like accompany small children through checkpoints to school, even though they too were threatened in the process. I can only imagine that this passage about the passing away of present arrangements would be heard by Palestinians as good news, indeed. There would be an end to the occupation, now 70 years old, which to the children and youth we met in the refugee camp has now feels so permanent. It is a comfort to hear that systems of oppression will end. Yes, because for too many people we met, they have lost children to violence on both sides of the conflict, Jewish and Palestinian children. But to those who are on the side of the oppression and who have gained power and wealth, the dismantling of these systems is bad news indeed. Sometimes the only difference between good news and bad news is where you happen to be when you get that news. I had always assumed that Mark 13 foretelling the destruction of the temple was bad news. Jesus on a bad day. But to the person who has been abused, thrown down by the world, this news that the world shall be thrown down is good news. For God to say, this world is not as I intended, this world is not as it is as I intended to be, I am still working and will work to make this world my world in all of its goodness and fullness. This is good news, the beginning of good news. As Martin Luther King Jr. said in his Palm Sunday sermon at the National Cathedral in Washington just days before his assassination, we shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right, no lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth, crushed to the earth, will rise again. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair the stone of hope. Amen.